Voices for Florida Girls makes a splash in Jacksonville with a high-profile visit. We'll tell you about it just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio. And now make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's on iTunes. Just ahead, we'll tell you about the push to advance the rights of women and girls in Florida. You can join the show at 549-2937. Then later, NASA's chief scientist on his unconventional solutions to climate change. Plus, we'll also chat about the 26.2 Marathon with founder Donna Deegan. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, it's called Voices for Florida Girls, a unique statewide initiative that supports the well-being of girls in our state. Members are committed to ensuring that all girls, particularly girls at risk, have the opportunity to succeed and reach their potential. Now, instrumental in that effort is Jacksonville's own Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center. It uses research, advocacy, and training to advance the rights of girls and young women, especially those that are in the justice or child protection systems. Now, the new president and CEO of the Ms. Foundation will be visiting town today as part of a national listening tour, and the center will play a pivotal role. We've got a preview as we welcome Dr. LaWanda Rivora, president and CEO of the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center. Dr. Rivora, good morning.
Good morning.
Dorothy Pittman Hughes, advocate for women and civil rights icon, also in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Taylor McDonald, director of strategic planning and public affairs with the Policy Center.
Thanks for having us on, Melissa.
Great to have you all on the show. And right now, we want to know your thoughts as we talk about Voices for Florida Girls and the challenges affecting young women and girls, especially those in the system. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. So lots of excitement, Dr. Rivora, today. The new CEO of the Ms. Foundation, Teresa Younger, coming to town today. What brought that about?
Well, we're really excited, and we really have to acknowledge Dorothy Pittman Hughes, who was really instrumental in bringing Ms. Younger here to our community so that we could highlight the work that we're doing around reform and activism from girls and young women in our community.
And of course, you, Dorothy, along with Gloria Steinem, years ago helped found Ms. Magazine. That was in the early 70s, so it's a 40-year legacy.
It truly is, and it was needed then, and it's wonderful to have it resurged and come back again because the children, our girls, need it now. And they have more to deal with than we seem to have had during that time. So it's really wonderful to have Ms. Younger coming to talk with us, and so that we can talk and she can listen and the National Women's Movement can get on board to help us.
Give us a call if you're just joining the show as we talk about Voices for Florida Girls, 549-2937. Taylor, tell us about Voices for Florida Girls.
Voices for Florida Girls is a partnership that we have. It's an initiative of the Policy Center and the Children's Campaign in Tallahassee. This is a grassroots organization that seeks to inform members of the policies, the legislation that's being proposed so that our community can be informed about the legislation that affects our girls and our children.
And these issues are complex, Dr. Rivora. Can you explain how the Policy Center deals with legislation, advocacy, and why the center needs to exist?
Well, it's really important that we have the center so that we can give voice to what's happening to girls and young women in our community. And I think sometimes that we can be unaware of what challenges that girls are facing. And in fact, when we look at what's happening right here in Duval County, based on the results of the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, we find that 1 out of 5 girls in high school and 1 out of 3 girls in middle school right here in Duval County have reported they've seriously considered suicide. And we know that 1 out of 3 girls entering the juvenile justice system on the First Coast have reported suicide ideation. And these are girls who are coming to us with histories of trauma with sexual victimization and exploitation and abuse. And so often we focus on their behavior and not the trauma that's driving the behavior. So our work is about giving voice to that and changing the policies and processes that continue to push our girls into the juvenile justice and the child welfare system.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment as we discuss Voices for Florida Girls, 549-2937. Dorothy Pittman-Hughes, girls have always been at special risk of sexual exploitation. In today's world, there is greater awareness of this and also sexual trafficking. But you started talking about these issues decades ago, and they're still with us.
Yes, they are still with us. And actually, there are more in Jacksonville than I would have ever expected. I've been working with the group where there are more than 360 women who were sexually abused as children. So it is so important that the center focus on the young people today. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so glad that Ms. Younger is coming to, because women's movement was the women's movement when I was coming up and when we got started. But right now, it needs to bring itself to the people and become a community. As Taylor said, it has to become a grassroots effort because we can't leave any girl out of it.
How can people get more involved in this at the grassroots level?
That's a great question. There are lots of ways of getting involved. So one way is to join Voices for Florida Girls at iamforkids.org. Iamforkids.org. There you can sign up to receive information, newsletters, and be brought up to speed on the legislative issues. You can also go to the Policy Center website, which is seethegirl.org. Seethegirl.org. And there we have ways of getting involved at a really just tangible, easy level.
Lots of things you can do. And if you're just tuning in, what are your questions and comments about Voices for Florida Girls? The number to join us, 549-2937. Mary at the Beaches. Hey, Mary, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you so much for bringing awareness to this issue. And just for allowing callers just to discuss and, let them know that this is a big issue with girls and that it's important to let everyone know that you don't have to keep it a secret and there is help and there's avenues and it happens to innocent children, innocent girls every day, and that it's not your fault that things like this happen. It's unfortunate the world we live in today, but that once you get help, like with the avenues that are available on the call today, then you will find peace, and your life will open up to so many other avenues. So thank you so much.
Mary, that's Mary at the Beaches. Thank you for that call. LaWanda Rivora, that's a big part of your work at the policy level, changing policies so that girls who've been victimized and sexually traumatized are not stigmatized and punished in the way that often happens. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And our work is about partnering with girls and young women to not only change the policies, but to create model programs that are really grounded in the lived experiences of girls and that can help them to heal from their trauma and to provide them a safe space for really sharing what's happened to them and to recognize that together we can really lift our girls up and make them the center of our community, and our community will be better off.
Now, what's going to be happening today? You have a whole slate of events, right? Can you tell us?
We do. We're really excited to have Ms. Younger join us. Unfortunately, her plane was waylaid, so she couldn't be here this morning. But we are going to head to a listening session this morning at North Shore Elementary School. It's where we have one of our model programs called Girl Matters. It's elementary. And this will be an opportunity for her to hear from girls themselves. Everything that we do at the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center is grounded and rooted in the voices of the girls we partner with. And we're excited that these girls have an opportunity to share with Ms. Younger on a national level what they're experiencing.
And Dorothy, you were instrumental in bringing her to town, right?
Well, hopefully.
Yes. If she can get here.
When she called and said, Dorothy, I'm coming to Jacksonville, and we're going to spend a couple of days listening, I was really happy about that. And I really want to get people to continue. When she's gone, I'd like for people to contact me because, and this is women, mothers, women, we need to organize about 1,000 women in order to stand up for our girls and stand up for the children. So I'm asking people to get on board and let's use the information we get from Teresa this weekend.
To do that, and if you're just tuning in, it's 549-2937. What are your questions about Voices for Florida Girls? 549-2937. Russell in Jacksonville. Hey, Russell, good morning.
Good morning. I am calling because I just tuned into your broadcast, and I'm hearing some things of what women can do to help this cause. But as a man with a daughter, I'd like to know if there is something men could do to participate on a number of levels to help further this cause.
Sure. Thanks, Russell. Thanks for the call. Dr. Rivora.
And I also thank you for the call, Russell. We would invite men to also join Voices for Florida Girls because we see the needs of girls and young women as certainly we want to convene women, but men together to really provide services and interventions and prevent these things from happening to our daughters. So we invite men and women to be part of this advocacy and activism movement.
Yeah, it is striking, especially men who have young daughters become really sensitized to this issue, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine any parent.
Any parent, but particularly yeah. when you have a young daughter.
Yeah.
I would think.
Sure. I would imagine so.
John in Rivers. Oh, we lost John. John, give us a call back. 549-2937. Joseph in Jacksonville. Hey, Joseph. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Well, I've been listening this morning, and one of the things that kind of that I had, and I was discussing with my fiance, was that we have a daughter who has suffered some trauma in the past, and we've been dealing with, in Florida, and especially Duval County, there is no program and there's no help for someone who has a daughter who needs to be in an inpatient type of facility. Have you heard of throughout, you know, the years that you guys have been advocating for girls, like, is there any place throughout Florida that you know of that could actually help a young girl who needs the type of inpatient care?
That's actually one of the challenges that we have in Florida, and part of our advocacy agenda is working toward creating a service network that would include prevention through a residential treatment programs. What I would ask you to do is to contact us at the Policy Center, and we would be more than happy to give you some resources, but we would really have to know more and understand more about the needs of your daughter. So I wouldn't want to just give recommendations right now without understanding more about the needs of your daughter. But you can, if you go to our website, which is www.seethegirl.org, you'll see all of our contact information, and we would be happy to work with you and your family to help you find the appropriate services to meet the needs of your daughter.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah,
you're
thank
welcome.
You, Joseph. Thanks for the call. Lots of calls at 549-2937 about Voices for Florida Girls. Doran on the west side. Doran, good morning. You're on the air. Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Melissa?
Great, thanks.
Good. Listen, I was I'm intrigued by this conversation. One of your guests made a comment about focusing on behavior and not the trauma. She was talking about young women in their program who have experienced significant trauma and how that leads to self-destructive behavior. And I'm just trying to understand a little better, and I hope that they would explain the more about this approach and the benefits. How does that work? What does it mean to focus on the behavior and not on the trauma?
Thanks for the call. Let's talk about that, because that's a big part of what you do.
It very much is, and thank you for the question and giving me the opportunity to clarify. In Jacksonville, in Duval County, we actually lock up more girls in residential lockup facilities than any other county in the state of Florida. And what we know is the majority of the girls coming into the juvenile justice system, right now one out of three referrals to the justice system is a girl, and the girls have histories of trauma and victimization and exploitation. And although we certainly believe that girls need to be held accountable for their behaviors, we also strongly believe that we have to recognize the trauma that is driving those behaviors, and that we create programs and services that are designed for treatment and intervention and not punishment and lockup. And so that's what I'm talking about when I talk about our system. Far too often, when girls get caught up in the juvenile justice system, focuses on the behavior, the delinquent act, or something that she has done, and what has happened to her fades into the background, and we must focus on treatment and intervention.
And it's a different set of circumstances for boys, juvenile boys, but the same argument applies when you mention the Children's Campaign, for example. That campaign is advocating for all children around the state, right?
That's right. The Children's Campaign is Florida's watchdog for children. And when we elevate the voices and lived experiences of girls, we change policies and practices that affect boys. Boys are awesome. I have one myself.
Dorothy.
Yes, I really want to find a way for the listeners to get everyday support. When we talk about grassroots, we need to understand that what we're talking about is the losing the fear of being in control of ourselves, owning ourselves, and we can then help someone else to do that. So I would love for people to contact me, because, as well as the center, because one of the things, the links, and this is why the center is so important to Jacksonville too, it links itself with people who are not afraid to be whole people. And I thank you for having involved me for the 4 years that I've been involved with Taylo and the sister here. We have been working, but there's so much more that we need to do. And what we have to do is really, as women, take the responsibility to say, none of this is going to happen anymore without it being exposed. We are going to take the responsibility for training and supporting and giving help to the community. So we're available. Please do use the media to contact us. And Melissa, I thank you for having supported me for the number of years that I've been in Jacksonville. You have had me come on, and you let me talk to people, and I thank you so much.
By the way, Dorothy, people are tweeting the show with pictures of you. They're excited to hear you on the air this morning. Let's go to Henry on the north side. Go ahead, Henry.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Melissa. And I appreciate the speaker today. A very interesting topic. I got a couple of things that I would like to point out. First of all, sexual assault of young girls and boys is nothing new. Particularly if you go on the international level, it's a big business, you know. So there's abuse all over. But particularly here in Jacksonville, I think, and I don't know what your opinion is, but our educational systems has failed. It's failing us. And I'm curious to know if there's any communication with the educational system to educate folks and students about the problems with sexual abuse. And I think if we look at education as educating the public, I think we'd be able to more advance on the issue. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Henry. Great point from Henry on the north side.
Thank you, Henry. We actually have a partnership with the Duval County Schools. And as Taylor said earlier, one of our programs is Girl Matters. It's elementary, where we are actually, our staff and highly trained college interns are in the schools actually providing care management services as well as education to both the girls and young women as well as their families. And our hope is that we can expand this program to middle school and ultimately to high school. And you're right, it's a major issue here in Florida. In fact, Florida, when we look at sex trafficking as just one aspect of this, North Florida is the third highest in the state for receiving calls for human trafficking, which includes sex trafficking. And this is an important topic that we must educate both our boys and girls about, as well as their parents, so that they understand the risk.
The Monique Burr Foundation does some work in the school system on this as well, I know. And let's go now to Danielle at the Beaches. Hey, Danielle, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I couldn't help but think of a horrible case that has happened here locally in the last few months, with a young girl. And it made me wonder, do you partner with the Department of Children and Families at all? So when cases of sexual abuse on girls and young women are brought up, are you made aware of that, or are your services available to those children?
Yeah, great questions coming in from callers. Thank you, Danielle.
We partner with both the Department of Children and Families and the Department of Juvenile Justice. And our work is about being available to support the girls and their families in any way that we can and really advocate for them, making sure that we give them a voice in terms of what happens to them, and so that they can navigate the system.
Again, the website is seethegirl.org, seethegirl.org. It's Voices for Florida Girls, a lot of activity going on in Jacksonville today, and we are so pleased to have hosted all three of you. Thank you so much, Dr. LaWanda Rivora and Taylor McDonald of the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center. Also with us, civil rights icon Dorothy Pittman Hughes. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Well, much more still ahead later. Don't miss it as Donna Deegan joins us to talk about this year's 26-2 marathon to finish breast cancer and important new research. But up next,
Miami, all of South Florida, it's simply a question of how fast is the water rising. And as of right now, that rise is increasing and could be higher than what people are now thinking.
A conversation with NASA's chief scientist on climate change and Florida. That's after this.
Morning Edition is everywhere.
Lourdes Garcia,
Alice Fugin,
Ari Shapiro,
NPR News,
Monrovia,
Sao Paulo,
Beirut,
London. Reporting from bunkers, streets, alleys, jungles, and deserts. But most importantly, we're wherever you are. Start your day with a trip around the world and wake up with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX,
reveal.
The first thing we knew is that this story is going to be about people trying to keep secrets.
Tracking down what one powerful religious hierarchy was keeping under wraps.
How come we didn't hear about the seriousness of his past, you know?
Find out on the next reveal. There's always more to the story. Saturday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Looking for fresh music? Join us weeknights at 7 for After Hours. You'll hear everything from jazz to electronica, only on 89.9 FM After Hours.
Welcome back. Well, he's the chief scientist at NASA's Langley Research Center. And increasingly these days, Dennis Bushnell is focused on climate change and what he calls unconventional solutions to addressing its impacts, especially here in Florida with all our coastline. I spoke with him about climate, sea level rise, and what we can expect in the coming years here in the Sunshine State. NASA's Dennis Bushnell, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So good to have you on the show. Recently, you had planned to come to Jacksonville to discuss unconventional solutions to climate change. That is certainly an attention-getting headline. Can you share with us, when it comes to solutions to climate change, what are some of the unconventional solutions you've envisioned? You are certainly seen as a thought leader in this area, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Okay. there are many. One is genomic cyanobacteria. There's a company called Jewel Biotechnology that came out of MIT where they were able to change cyanobacteria genomically so that taking in CO2, wastewater, and sunlight, they can grow some 20,000 gallons of heavy transportation fuels per acre year in a nearly closed CO2 cycle. So this could possibly replace usual gasoline fuel oils. The second one is halophytes. It turns out that the plant kingdom is broken up into glycophytes, or freshwater plants, and halophytes, or saltwater plants. Halo means salt. There's some 10,000 natural halophytes of all kinds of plants. And these can grow on wastelands, deserts. And 44% of the land worldwide are deserts and wastelands. And they grow using seawater, and 97% of the water is seawater. And the seawater contains 80% of the nutrients. So you can grow biomass by growing these halophytes using seawater on wastelands. And the biomass can be used for food, can be used for petrochemical feedstock, for plastics, and you can sequester some 10% of the CO2 that's taken up in the roots of these plants. So this is better than a closed CO2 cycle. We did some estimates of what would happen if you grew halophytes on something like a good chunk of the Sahara. So you plow up the Sahara, you irrigate it with the Mediterranean, and you put rainfall back in the Middle East and stop the desertification of the sub-Sahara from the seawater evaporating off of this. And you literally solve land water because you're growing food with seawater, so you get back a large chunk of the 68% of the fresh water now used for conventional agriculture. You grow food, you grow energy, so this is green energy, and that favorably affects climate.
It's a huge idea, one you've talked about, and when you present this idea, whether it's before a general audience or before policymakers, what's the reaction?
The reaction is, yeah, this is a big idea. And as climate has become more obviously real and worrisome, there's been considerable interest. We have instigated a project in southern Egypt near Aswan. There are projects in the United Arab Emirates. China is working on this. There are farms in northern Mexico growing airplane fuel this way. And there are farms, Boeing's working with people in the United Arab Emirates to grow airplane fuels also. There are now 22 nations who are using caliphates to grow food and fodder. And on the Indian subcontinent, there's been a saline bio-halophyte, agriculture on their shorelines for hundreds of years, growing food and fodder.
Fascinating. Let me ask you as well, when it comes to Florida, the state seen as the most vulnerable to sea level rise in the coming decades, can you share with us your thoughts about specific impacts to the Sunshine State in terms of climate change?
Well, it's fairly obvious. Much of anything very far south is going to have a problem with climate change. The current seawater rise mean for 2050 is around 1.7 feet. The top of the projections is around 2.5 to 3 feet by 2050. The current climate change, actual changes are running toward the top of the projections. And that's because the IPCC projections do not include the effects of the many positive feedbacks. This includes the methane and CO2 coming out of the tundra and the ocean as they warm. It includes the fact that the CO2 uptake in the ocean is going way down as the ocean becomes acidic. The algae is going away, and all of this produces higher temperatures, which means more water evaporation, and water vapor is the worst greenhouse gas. So it looks like we're going to have greater than the top of the IPCC projections, possibly. But that means for Florida, at least 3 feet, perhaps, by 2050. And just south of Jacksonville is a place called Sawgrass, which has an average elevation of 3 feet. So this is going to be interesting for Florida. Sea level rise impacts such things as insurance. Here in the Norfolk area, Virginia sea level rise is 2 to 3 times the national average because our land is sinking for several reasons. Yours is sinking quite as much. But our shoreline property here, the estimates of its value are going down year on year. Why give a mortgage on something for 30 or 40 years if it's going to be, water affected? Huge costs of raising, armoring, and retreating. Norfolk, which floods a little bit in, regular high tides now, tried to raise roads. Then they figured out they had to raise buildings. Then they figured out they had to raise utilities. And, raising a building is around $150,000 on up. And after a while, you do what the Brits have decided to do, which is retreat. And so the issues are, how fast is the water rising? And it may be rising by 2050, 2.5 to 3 feet or more. And then beyond that, more, because it won't stop rising. And the rise rate has been increasing. And then how do you handle this? Now, for Florida, there are some very interesting approaches, okay? It turns out that you can convert some of your shallow flooded areas into aquaculture and actually grow the cyanobacteria from a Juul biotechnology. You can also put in fish farms and so forth. You can consider floating. That's not too good, but it's worth looking at.
Consider what? I'm sorry?
Floating. In other words, putting homes and infrastructures on plastic floats.
Oh, I see. So do you agree with the projections some have made that Miami, if aggressive mitigation isn't undertaken to combat sea level rise, Miami could, in a few decades, look something like Venice?
I don't know. I haven't looked in detail whether there's parts of Miami that would be high enough to constitute a Venice. Southern Florida has this porous limestone, which is starting to infiltrate into your water system, the seawater. Miami, you know, all of South Florida, it's simply a question of how fast is the water rising. And as of right now, that rise is increasing. And with the positive feedback effects, could be higher than what people are now thinking.
Are you thinking parts of Miami-Dade, Broward are going to be fully underwater?
I haven't looked at the detailed maps for that area.
Let me ask you as a follow-up. Of course, you are the chief scientist at NASA, Langley. Governor Rick Scott recently said that the state had spent $350 million to mitigate the impacts of sea level rise. He met last year with a group of climate scientists in Florida who asked for the meeting and asked him to really take a hard look at Florida's vulnerability to sea level rise. Yeah, he, like other politicians, when asked about climate, initially came back with the response, "I'm not a scientist." You are a scientist. What are your thoughts about the politics of this, particular here in Florida?
Well, the politics seem to be the following. Most of the government projections are for sea level rise rates from the 1900s. In about 1994 or 5, the sea level rise started going faster. And these faster rates are not yet included in all of the government projections. An increasing number, but not all of them. People have huge investments in all of the shoreline stuff. There's huge numbers of people living on, you know, lower land in the U.S. It starts up in New England and goes all the way around to Texas. The West Coast, not so much. People, you know, want to hold on to this as long as they can, as they can. Fact is that, you know, you can arbor, put in sea walls and so forth. You can, you know, increase elevation. And one has to do a cost-benefit analysis. Okay? You know, if you spend that kind of money and do this, you know, what are the benefits over how long? How do you amortize those investments? These are solid investment decisions that the people need to think about. But in the beginning, I believe the Republican in this new Congress have come out and said, yes, climate change is real. Yes, people are involved in it. And there's some very good news in all of this, believe it or not. The current energy status is that the major renewables have over a factor of 10 more capacity than required to replace the fossil carbon energy. The major renewables are wind, biomass, hydro, solar thermal, solar photovoltaics, and drilled geothermal. The cost of the renewables has been dropping year on year for decades, and they're still dropping. And they're now either falling or have fallen below price parity for fossil fuels, and their efficiency is improving. And therefore, over 60% of new generation equipment is renewables, and 25% of world generation is renewables. And the fossil fuel subsidies are four times the renewable subsidies. So the renewables are getting better, not because they've got bigger subsidies. And then there's a major trend, which is on-site distributed generation coupled with conservation. We have now some 200,000 off-grid homes, and these use such things as bioreactors on their back porch, putting sewage and kitchen scraps and yard waste in to make fuel, micro wind, solar photovoltaics, going to Walmart, buying solar photovoltaics, solar thermal, seasonal energy storage from the German work, piezoelectric energy from motions, and so forth. So overall, we're well on our way to shifting to renewables relatively rapidly now.
So you're hopeful when you look at the future of this issue, it sounds as though you're hopeful.
I am very hopeful that, because now there is a financial incentive to do so. Okay, in other words, going to renewables when it was, fix the climate problem, that was one thing that wasn't, too successful. But now that we technologists have been able to drive the price of the renewables essentially at or below such things as coal and natural gas, people are shifting to those very rapidly. Now, the question is, can we do it rapidly enough to stop much of the water rise in the nearer future? And the inertia in the whole climate system is such that probably not by 2050, maybe by 2100.
Well, it's fascinating to speak with you, and thank you for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you very much.
And that was NASA's chief scientist at Langley, Dennis Bushnell, joining us. Back in a moment with Donna Deegan and Mayo Clinic's Edith Perez as we talk the 26-2 with Donna Marathon.
Chances are you remember where you were when prosecutors released the verdicts about Michael Brown and Eric Gardner. When grand juries cleared police of wrongdoing in their deaths, the nation responded with protests, finger-pointing, and questions. I'm State of the Reunion host Al Letson. Join WJCT for an open and honest discussion that brings issues of race and justice to the forefront with the hopes of understanding and change. Race in the River City, February 12th at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama is asking Congress for legal authority to use military force against ISIS. Debate over when and how the U.S. military can be used and whether Congress should limit the scope of operations.
Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
With same-sex marriage legal in Florida, advocates are celebrating civil rights victories. In WJCT's StoryCorps Out Loud series, we take a look back at Jacksonville's gay rights history with stories from the local LGBT youth support group, Jasmine.
I had never heard the term trans.
My mother, I think she went to bed every night praying that I would be heterosexual.
StoryCorps Out Loud is Thursdays during Morning Edition on WJCT.
Welcome back. According to the American Cancer Society, breast cancer is the second most commonly diagnosed type of cancer in women and the second leading cause of cancer deaths. An estimated 232,000 new cases are expected to be diagnosed this year around the country. But there's good news. There's progress being made, and it's thanks in part to the groundbreaking research at Jacksonville's own Mayo Clinic. And some of that, of course, is funded through proceeds from the 8th annual 26-2 with Donna Marathon. It will come back to the beaches this weekend. Dr. Edith Perez, well-known breast cancer researcher at Mayo, and Donna Deegan, former news anchor and founder of 26-2 with Donna, join us in studio today with lots of exciting news to share. Ladies, great to have you back on the show.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you both. And we'll talk about the research coming out of Mayo in a moment. But first, Don, I can't believe the marathon is in its 8th year, and it's coming up this weekend. It's very exciting.
Isn't that awesome? And what I'm really excited about, Melissa, is that we have no rain in the forecast this year.
Yay!
It looks like we're actually going to have just about perfect temperatures for marathon runners, which we've been hoping for a while. So yeah, 8th year and almost $4 million raised so far. So very excited about that.
Now, there's a lot to know about the race. Mm-hmm. There will be a lot of people at the beaches. What's the route? What should people that live out there and people that are coming in to participate, What should they know?
Well, what they should know is for the third year now, we're starting out by TPC. We start right off ATP Tour Boulevard. So people that are coming from, say, the Jacksonville Beaches area should come down A1A. People that live west of that area should really consider taking 210. Folks that live along the route, what we'll do is we'll run down A1A to Corona, then down Ponte Vedra Boulevard, then connect into Jacksonville Beach and run all the way through Atlantic Beach and then back and finish where we finish breast cancer at the Mayo Clinic.
That's right. You'll be leading the way, and Dr. Perez, they will finish at Mayo, and you have some very exciting news to share, a clinical trial around a new breast cancer vaccine.
Yeah, Melissa, we have at Mayo, you know, through funding from the 26.2 with Donna, a very innovative program called the Breast Cancer Translational Genomics Program. And the idea here is to identify abnormalities in tumors and then allow us to develop new treatment strategies. We have a fantastic team. And over the years, you know, this research has led us to the development of novel trials. So for 2015, 2016, we have some great ideas targeting different proteins. Vaccine approach is one of them. We're looking at other ways to modulate the immune system. And we have new antibodies. So we have about six different clinical trials that we're developing at this time. So, you know, the future looks bright. And these funds from the 26.2 with Donna really help us conduct this research.
Yeah, the marathon raises money and it raises awareness and it brings people here from all over the world.
Yeah, you are correct. And, you know, this event allows us to educate people related to the possibilities for the future, also provide an opportunity for people to be involved, you know, for themselves and also for other persons around the world.
Yeah, it's not too late to register or participate, and you don't have to run the whole 26 miles, isn't that
oh,
right?
Oh, no. We have you can register at the Prime Osborne Convention Center this weekend. We have a 5K that's at 8:30 on Saturday morning and a one-mile family fun run that you can walk or run. There's a half marathon. There's a relay. So really, there's a distance for everybody. And you know, Melissa, I have to say that I think the research that we've just released, that this new vaccine trial, you know, this vaccine trial is for women with a particularly tough type of breast cancer, the same kind I had, that's triple negative breast cancer. Mm-hmm. We have not had any sort of adjuvant treatment for that beyond chemotherapy. A lot of the other breast cancers, there have been other things that have been used to be able to treat it. This is the first time that Mayo researchers have been able to isolate a protein or something that is expressed with these tumors that we can now address with a vaccine, or at least the trial for a vaccine, to see if it's going to be efficacious. So for women with this particularly tough type of breast cancer, and that's usually young women, mm-hmm. this is a big deal. And we've seen a lot of excitement around the marathon this year because people have said, wow, this is really making a difference.
Right. They feel that they're running, that their participation is really making, moving the needle on the treatment of this disease.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, to make a point related to this vaccine trial and other trials, this is one of the trials in development based on work, which is a collaborative work with one of our experts in immunology, our basic researchers. And this trial is still going to take some time to be activated, but we want people to know that this is one of the very promising strategies that we hope to be able to make available to people towards the latter part of 2015 and 2016.
And a quick call coming in before we close out the hour. Actually, we don't have time to get her on the air, but email the show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. People calling in with questions. For anyone that's just tuning in, it's not too late to learn about this, register, and take part in all the activities this weekend.
Just go to breastcancermarathon.com and you can see all the information, but you will have to, at this point, go to the Prime Osborne to register because online registration is now closed.
Yeah, so, but if you're just listening now to Donna and Dr. Perez, the website is breastcancermarathon.com, the 8th annual 26-2 with Donna, happening this weekend at the beaches, and more activities on Saturday. Dr. Edith Perez of Mayo Clinic, Donna Deegan, so great to see you both. I know it's going to be a great weekend and great weather, as you said, too. So very exciting. Have fun, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Welcome. And that's our program. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers this morning. The show's producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you have questions or comments about the show, we want to hear your feedback. Just send an email to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. And if you miss a show, just subscribe to our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, President Obama is asking Congress for legal authority to use military force against ISIS. Debate over when and how our troops should be used and whether Congress should limit the scope of operations. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.